The market doesn't joke around, so why would you? Get serious. Choose Tastytrade. Tastytrade gives you the tools you need to make smarter moves. Dig into data with advanced charting, track profit accurately with order chain trackers, see risk clearly with curve analysis, and trade with low-capped commissions, stocks, options, futures, and more. All on one platform. No wonder serious traders choose Tastytrade. Join the club, genius. Tasty Trading is a registered broker-dealer and member of FINRA and SIPC.
Fast Money starts right now, live from the NASDAQ market site overlooking New York City's Times Square. I'm Melissa Lee. Your traders on the desk are Tim Seymour, Brian Kelly, Mark Teffer, and Guy Adami. Tonight on Fast, it looks like Wall Street believes in the Disney magic. The stock getting a slew of positive coverage ahead of the launch of its streaming service. Is the stock heading for a big breakout? The traders will weigh in. Plus, check out shares of Lyft, the new IPO falling 10% today alone, hitting its lowest level since going public as it approaches $60 a share. We'll tell you what it means for Uber as that stock gears up to go public itself. But we start off with the banks near their judgment day. The CEOs of the big banks surviving a grilling on the Hill as they gear up for earnings at the end of the week. J.P. Morgan will kick things off on Friday. It is the worst performing of the big banks so far this year, up only 8%. Citigroup, Goldman Sachs, Morgan Stanley, they're all up double digits. But, of course, the sector has been mostly dead money for the last year. So will this quarter's earnings be the catalyst to set the financials on fire, Guy?
Hi, Mel. Well, I'd like to think the answer to that question is yes. I just don't see it happening. I for the life of me, I don't understand how all of a sudden you get this reacceleration in earnings for the banks, and they're going to be off to the races. Now, I think earnings will be okay. Earnings have been fine. J.P. Morgan's earnings, quite frankly, have been very good. But what's already priced in? And when you're getting towards 1.8 times price to tangible book in terms of a J.P. Morgan, I say maybe it's just a tad ahead of itself. You have to ask yourself the following question. Why is Citibank trading effectively tangible book? Why is Deutsche Bank in Europe, despite this whole Commerce Bank thing, continue to go down? I still think the banking woes in Europe at a certain point manifest themselves here.
Resident Bank Bull, what do you say?
You've got another reason, Guy, to really be angry with the Fed. It's negative interest rates that I think are killing the global central banks. It's certainly killing the European banks. For someone that's been constructive, I'm long J.P. Morgan, I'm long Citibank, I'm long Bank of America. And I can be long with those valuations with a capital deployment approach now that I think is actually investor friendly, with a balance sheet that's fantastic, with a business model that I think is conservative and not reckless. But is there going to be anything extraordinary in this quarter's numbers? No. And in fact, I think you're going to see downward tick in terms of their net interest margins. You're going to see downward tick in terms of sales and trading. You're going to see a downward tick probably in mortgage originations. But nonetheless, J.P. Morgan continues to print record profits.
You brought up a good point that there's nothing special about the banks. They're kind of safety type of thing. They're utilities. That's effectively what they become, is utilities. So they should trade at one times book. So if you look at the ones that aren't trading at one times book, it's a J.P. Morgan. The ones that are, it's a Citibank. Citibank might even be a little bit below that. So that's probably why it's up more than the others, or one of the leaders this year. The only thing, in my view, that is going to change this, if you get a steeper yield curve, and that can happen one of two ways. The economy accelerates, which it doesn't look like it's necessarily going to do, or the Fed decides to steepen the yield curve with their balance sheet. So to me, that's the bet you're making if you're buying banks right now.
There's absolutely nothing that excites me about the banks right now. It's really, really difficult for them to make money with either a flat or an inverted yield curve. We do own J.P. Morgan. I think J.P. Morgan's best of breed. Their ROE is really head and shoulders above the rest of their peers. And you get some good revenue diversification from them in the AUM revenues that they're collecting, as well as the investment banking fees as well.
I was talking to Mike Mayo this morning on Squawk Box.
Love Mike Mayo. He's a fantastic analyst.
For the first time, he said that he's bullish all five banks that he covers, all the five major banks.
Mike, who's been very negative, by the way, let's be clear. But I think he's been very bullish for the last couple of years.
For a while. And I said, well, you know, you can make the same argument over and over and over again, quarter after quarter, for the past few quarters, at the very least, in terms of the strength of their balance sheet, mm-hmm. the growth of the economy in the U.S., et cetera. But what is the catalyst to get these stocks moving higher? And he said, interestingly, every few years, all they have to do is not mess up, and then there will be a re-rating of these bank shares. Is it as simple
as
that?
I think they don't mess up.
Haven't they been messing up, though, for the last couple of years?
Right?
I would make an argument that's...
Well, wait a second. I mean, Goldman Sachs absolutely messed up over the last
with the IMDb and all.
I mean, you can make an argument that Wells Fargo, all they've been doing for the last 2 years, is messing up. So some have
although
been,
they're trading at a premium.
I know. And they are.
Yeah.
Right? So
I take my statement back.
No,
you're actually right. Now that I think about it, those are two poster children for mess ups. But I do think, you know, referencing what Brian said about the banks kind of slow and steady like utilities. By the way, utilities at all-time highs. So you could make an argument that they should be keeping pace. But you know, really, what are they doing? What are they there to do? And they're involved in transactions. They're collecting fees. And that predictability to their earnings model, to me, even with a lot of disruption, and maybe that's it. At the end of the day, every industry is getting disrupted. You can make an argument that technology and fintech and all these things that are disrupting financials, they're as poorly positioned as anybody.
Yeah, so I mean, if the banks aren't really moving, why not just grab some of the preferreds? You can pocket a decent yield at this point. I mean, you know, at least you know you're going to collect that dividend. So I think there's potentially some opportunity with the preferreds.
Or if you believe that banks are really being disrupted, do you go to the flip side of who is disrupting the banks? Which stocks are disrupting the banks? Maybe you look at Square.
PayPal.
Maybe
or cryptocurrencies. Yeah,
for sure. Mm-hmm.
You know I'm going to go with Bitcoin. I'm going with Bitcoin on that.
But
who is ripe to be disrupted by cryptocurrencies? It's the banks. So eventually, they're going to be a problem.
But that's not a pairs trade.
That's not a pairs trade. I mean, you can. Some people are advocating put that on, shorting the banks, long Bitcoin. BK would not advise that. Just be long Bitcoin.
I guess the question we should ask is, and a question I think you were sort of asking is, will the banks set the tone for the rest of the earnings season?
And I wasn't, but that's an excellent question to ask.
Question,
and I'm glad that you asked the question.
Right. Fantastic.
Trade
it. An excellent question.
I wish I had an answer.
Ask.
No, I don't. I think the answer is probably no. I don't think the bank's earnings. I think J.P. Morgan's earnings will be outstanding. I think Goldman Sachs earnings will be probably middle of the road. And I think what we've seen historically, J.P. Morgan trading higher and Goldman Sachs trading lower, is probably going to be the norm. With that said, in terms of earnings season across the board, you know, we've had the conversation. I do think we're on the brink of an earnings recession. I think people are setting themselves up for a lot of disappointment as we go through the next couple of weeks.
I don't think the banks have set the tone for earnings season for years.
I'd be shocked if they did. I'd be absolutely shocked.
I think industrials would really do a better job of doing that. I mean, it's got the highest R squared of all the sectors as it relates to the market. So I think that's
correlation R squared.
What I'll say about the banks is what we've seen in the last two quarters, maybe two to three quarters, is actually the banks come out of the gates and actually pleasantly beat and beat in some cases by some significant amount. Shares don't do anything. In fact, they kind of disappoint. They don't hold on to a rally. And then banks actually have rallied kind of 2 weeks and 3 weeks into earnings season as the rest of the earnings have largely been very beneficial to their cause. So is that going to happen? It doesn't sound like there's a lot of optimism, but I would go back to, again, market positioning. The thing that bothers me about where the market is going into this earnings season, bull bear spreads, whatever you want to look at, sentiment is very, very bullish. And that's for the market overall. I don't think sentiment going into earnings is bullish in terms of what you're going to hear in terms of guidance for second quarter and the rest of the year. So because of that, I still think that there could be a risk to upside responses from a lot of these companies.
What sector is going to be the tell for you?
For me, you're going to have to go with the industrials or tech sector, right? That's what everybody cares about right now. The banks, you can trade them. You want to trade them on a breakout, knock yourself out. But it's going to be what both tech and industrials together do for this earnings season. Without that support, at these levels, to me, the market is getting riskier the higher we go, right? I understand it's being built on the fact that you have loose money from central banks, but at some point, fundamentals do start to matter. So the higher we go, the little more scared BK gets.
There is an argument that is being made that people in general are underweight the markets. Do you feel like that's the same for the bank sector? I feel like that's one of those sectors that people point to and say value, value, value. And yet the bull case for banks was a bull case that they're making a year ago. And what's happened since then?
I think it's been hard to be underweight banks, even though it's been easy to say, you know, what's going to be the catalyst in banks. So, no, my sense is I think people are generally at equal weight in banks because the banks really have been running a pretty steady course of giving earnings, giving guidance, giving 2-3% dividends, which now over the last kind of 4 years is kind of a building dividend base, mm-hmm. is why I think a lot of people own these banks just to be in them.
Maxine Waters.
Mm. Mm-hmm. Great interview with Wilford Frost earlier this afternoon.
Just moments ago, in fact. Very fiery, you know, as chairwoman of the House Financial Services Committee. And I bring her up and Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez because it has the environment at all, even on the margins, changed for banks. I mean, if we had believed that deregulation was the wind at the back of the banks, could incrementally there be some tougher times 100%. Ahead?
100%. Is there existential risk with the banks now that there's new sheriffs in town in terms
even
of
even just dragging them up on Capitol Hill for seven hours at a time?
Yeah, I believe absolutely that's the case. I don't think the rhetoric's going to get any better. I think it's just going to get worse. So that could be absolutely a headwind for banks that we generally haven't talked about, but we probably should start talking about.
Yeah, I think that's fair, especially because the opposite is really what happened, right? Remember, on the election, you had essentially the triple clean sweep across the board, which included the House. And although nothing really happened for banks, you know, they continued through their CCAR tests and stress tests. What you saw is essentially the bullseye on their back was removed. And that's why banks outperformed out of the gate. So it's a fair point, Melissa. And I think in the environment we have going into elections, there's a lot of people that think that the big banks, especially the big banks, really didn't pay their just due for what happened in the financial crisis. And a lot of these are different CEOs, but it doesn't mean that the banks themselves aren't still considered villains.
All right. So, well, Squawk Box's Joe Kernan sat down for a rare and exclusive interview with Vice President Mike Pence earlier today. High on the agenda, the president's call for the Fed to help stimulate the economy.
There's no evidence of inflation in this economy.
So it's inflation.
And so we really do believe that, you know, what the president was saying is the quantitative tightening has not been the right approach. That he's spoken out against the policies of the Fed over the last 2 years, like many presidents have before him.
Right.
Is a president that really does believe that this economy is only starting to grow. I mean, you look at nations around the world, nations that we compete with every day, and the president really does believe that 3% is a starting point in this economy.
You can watch Joe's exclusive interview with the vice president tomorrow on Squawk Box starting at 6 a.m. Our next guest says she doesn't see the Fed cutting rates anytime soon. Let's bring in Rebecca Patterson, Chief Investment Officer at Bessemer Trust. Rebecca, welcome to you.
Thank you.
And I assume that's a good thing, a constructive environment for equities?
Well, with an unemployment rate at 3.8%, inflation, I don't necessarily agree with the vice president's comment that inflation's non-existent. It's not above the Fed's target of 2%, but it's just under 2%. We're seeing wages rising by almost 3.5%. So inflation's modest, but it isn't non-existent. So with that combination of factors, I can't see the Fed feeling any need to cut rates anytime soon. I think, if anything, the minutes from their meeting today showed that they're still looking at risks both ways. They've definitely paused. They're stopping the quantitative tightening sooner. But if we get a trade deal, if we get better global growth into the middle of this year, the Fed's saying, guys, just be careful. We could still raise rates if the environment were strong enough. If we saw oil prices and other factors lifting inflation to 2.3, 2.4, you can't rule out a tightening.
When you take a look at the performance of the various indices across the markets, does it concern you, for instance, that the S&P 500 is a couple percent from all-time highs, but we have the Russell basically in bear market territory? We got the Nasdaq up 20% this year. I mean, there's really seemed to be a disparity here. How do you read those market tea leaves?
I've been struck this year, taking the market and putting that on an economic lens, by the disparity between services and manufacturing, international versus domestic. And so when you look at the breakdown between how the markets are performing, I think that's reflected there too. The U.S. economy is doing very well in terms of the consumer, right? We have rising wages, we have a low unemployment rate, we have high savings rates. The manufacturing side, globally, it's collapsed. The U.S. is getting pulled down by that. Part of that's Europe and China, part of that is the trade war. And so I think as we talk about earnings season, that's all going to come through in a lot of diversification in terms of the earnings guidance and numbers we get. And I think you see that reflected in the markets, too. If you have a company that's focused on the American consumer, generally speaking, they're going to be doing okay. If you have a company that's very tied to the international manufacturing cycle or trade, God help them right now. And so I think that persists until we get a trade resolution, if we get a trade resolution, which I'm not sure we do.
So let's talk about the other trade war that might be out there, the European trade war. Mm-hmm. How much does that worry? How much does that fit into your equity decisions?
So, the U.S.-China one, we will get a deal. I think everyone here would agree we're going to get some sort of deal in the coming months. There's a question around how it's enforced, what the details are, if it really makes people feel really good or not. Do they lift the tariffs or not? But then I think the next target for Washington is autos, and I think there's a lot of angst towards Germany right now. In particular, they want Germany to import more LNG, natural gas, from the U.S. They don't want Germany to use Huawei or other Chinese tech for 5G. They want Germany to lower tariffs on autos. So, and Germany right now is pushing back fairly hard on some of this stuff. So the fact that we could threaten auto tariffs, I think, is very likely. Do we actually go ahead with tariffs? Not really a lot of support here in America for it, but that doesn't mean the rhetoric won't be there. Mm-hmm. And that rhetoric alone could be a reason that European equity sentiment stays capped, even if the valuations are relatively attractive.
So back to the Fed, the last I checked, analysts are pricing in a 60% probability of a rate cut by January of next year. What's your take on that?
So I think there is so much priced in here that the risk is skewed the other way. If we don't see a rise in inflation, the Fed's on hold. But why on earth would the Federal Reserve cut rates with unemployment rate at 3.8%? So what makes me a little nervous, maybe not today, but over the course of this year, is that equities partly are getting the support on these Fed hopes. If they don't come to fruition and the market has to reprice that, is that a cap? It, at least on multiples, perhaps, or certain types of sectors in the stock market. And I think it is. We still have a lot of equity exposure in our portfolios, but we're using pockets of strength to incrementally take some money off the table. We did a little bit of that in mid-February. And if I see another run-up on a trade deal, for example, with China, I'm going to keep saying thank you very much and just take a little bit off, because we think growth's going to slow pretty materially next year as fiscal becomes a drag for the United States. Maybe China's stable. I think Europe continues to face a lot of headwinds, even though the European Central Bank's fighting back.
It almost sounds like your portfolio is based on Tina. There is no alternative. I mean, because you're basically saying you would like to take some off the table. You see growth slowing down next year. But right now, this is the best place to be at this point.
Well, it's definitely not credit. The preferred point earlier aside, which I think is a good one, you know, one thing the bank CEOs in their 7-hour marathon today, when they're asked what scares you, they all mentioned cyber. But in terms of market risk, the most common answer was leveraged loans, corporate credit. Last year, we saw record issuance of leveraged loans, over $700 billion just in 1 year globally. And you've got a less liquid trading market compared to the last economic cycle. You've got a lot of this stuff packaged in CLOs and sold to Asian retail investors. When the economy slows more, you're going to see a lot of people wanting to get out of this stuff ahead of a downgrade cycle. And a lot of it's issued by shadow banks that aren't as regulated. So there is a real reason, I think, for these bank CEOs to worry about that.
How big of a risk is that, in your view?
I don't think it causes a recession. I think it's going to exacerbate the equity sell-off when we get there. Because when people see their credit holdings losing money, they want to offset those losses by taking profits on stocks. So I think the two are increasingly correlated.
All right. So you're underweight banks. What are you overweight?
Our biggest overweight has been and continues to be tech. Not a big surprise there. And that's served us well for the last few years. Obviously, we're being very mindful of which companies we're getting exposure to, but we're still very comfortable in that space. Doing a lot of work looking at the political issues around tech. Mm-hmm. What kind of regulation could we see? What's priced in? But for the moment, we're still pretty comfortable with that position.
All right. Rebecca, great to see you. Thank you.
Thanks
Rebecca
for having
Patterson
me.
Of Bessemer Trust. Guy Dami, what do you say?
The Mike Pence thing is fascinating. I want to speak in hyperbole, but quantitative easing is an emergency measure that was put in place. If this is the greatest economy in the history of our republic, what's the emergency? Number one, right? I mean, it's madness. And Mike Pence saying there's no inflation. I mean, I don't know where he's living, but gas prices have risen substantially over the last couple weeks. Healthcare is ridiculous, and education costs are through the roof. We have inflation in all the wrong places. I don't really care what the Fed says inflation is. We live day to day. You know it's there. So it's a lot of crazy talk going out there. With that said, to BK's point, if the market thinks the Fed has their back, it's going to continue to grind higher.
Well, you know, she talks about credit, Rebecca. That is she. And we're talking about high yield. We're talking about the U.S. leverage loan index. We're talking about measures of stress in funding. And it's just not there. In fact, I think right now you have kind of a sweet spot, which is that you actually have rates that are going lower with GDP that at least is flat to sideways. It does not mean that there isn't trouble ahead. Debt to GDP. We talk about this. It's absolutely something to watch. But if you're playing tactical markets right now, credit is not your enemy.
So ahead, do you believe in magic? Wall Street does when it comes to Disney stock. We will tell you what has the street so excited about the future of the Mouse House. Plus, check out shares of Lyft sinking today, hitting its lowest level since going public. We'll tell you what that could mean for Uber as it gears up for its debut. And later, we are making some fast money history today. The rookie, Mark Tepper, will step up to the plate to give us his first fast pitch ever. We are live from Times Square in New York City. Much more fast money right after this.
You seek the key, but first, you must learn the ways of precision, craft, and performance with Acura's all-electric ZDX. With a premium Bang & Olufsen sound system up to a 313-mile range and a Type S variant with an estimated 500 horsepower, the ZDX is their most powerful SUV yet. Unlock the energy when you visit Acura.com to order yours today.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Wall Street feeling the Disney magic, with the stock getting its second upgrade this week by BMO Capital Markets just today. The firm joining the likes of Cowen, Goldman Sachs, Rosenblatt, all putting out bullish notes on Disney ahead of its big investor day tomorrow, where it is widely expected the media giant will launch its new streaming service. All the Wall Street buzz surrounding Disney and its new streaming service sending the stock up more than 8% in just the past 2 weeks. So is the stock about to stream even higher? The Cowen note yesterday struck me because the analyst basically said this would be a deck clearing when it comes to sentiment. A lot of negative sentiment surrounding the Fox acquisition, what it would mean for the dilution of the brand and the cost, et cetera. But here we are, new product reset.
Right. Well, think about where we were a year and a half ago. And really, that was probably the low of sentiment when actually, you know, we were starting to really understand what was going on with cutting the cord. And hard to believe it took us that long to even figure that out. But they had the issues with ESPN. The cable business was really flailing. Look, all they've done is have their studio continue to mint money, theme parks, consumer products. And then, oh, and by the way, ESPN has come storming back. Oh, and guess what? They are going to compete on streaming. So the question is, what's the multiple here? Because Disney used to trade at a major premium to the sector. The entire sector was downgraded at around 18 times forward. I think it's still got a little room to the upside. But right now, I have to say, I'm long the stock. It's overbought. I don't think you need to buy it tomorrow.
Tim mentioned a year and a half ago. 2 years ago, the stock is approximately where it is today.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So what do you make of the stock?
So look, I like the stock, but my concern right now is around their content strategy. So I've heard so many people talk about how great their content library is, and I get it, but we're talking about selling subscriptions to Disney Plus, and I can't see people paying for subscriptions to watch Snow White and Aladdin over and over and over again.
Do you have children?
I do. But over and over and over again for a subscription? I don't know. I think you could buy it one time and be done with
it. That would be self-inflicted pain for parents, I guess.
Well, so listen, the point you mentioned that 2 years ago Disney was trading right around these levels. For 2 years, it's traded between 100 and 120. So you need some sort of catalyst to bust it out of this range. I think this could be it. It just might not be this week, right? Because we've had this massive run up from 108 up to about 117. So to me, I'm a seller of Disney against 120 here. I'll wait for it to prove it to me and break through. But once it breaks through, I think you've got a lot of room on this thing to run. It's just trading tactically, not a great time to get in, not good positioning. But in the long run, I think Disney does quite well with this news.
Why do you have a smirk?
Mel, you look like you're up to something.
No, I'm not up to anything. I'm not just here
like a game was
hosting
coming.
The show like normal, as I do every day at this time.
I'm just having a good time here on a
but
Wednesday
I was
afternoon.
Thinking, in, you know, let's flip it around. So the Disney impact to other players.
Aha. Uh-huh.
Such as a Netflix.
For a Netflix, for example.
For a Netflix.
Well, you made, I watched the TV all day. You were on at like 6 a.m.
Wow, morning. You really did watch
all
day.
No, I'm just saying, and you made a great point about Disney, same point you just made to Mark, in terms of stock was basically 2 years ago, it's where it is now, and it's sort of vacillated in between. Excellent point by you. Why does it break out? Well, Tim's point about ESPN, you know what, when they legalized gambling, that was sort of the saving grace for ESPN. Recall the stock was trading 99 or so that night. We talked about it. Stock's up 18% since. So maybe that's somewhat priced in. And just because they're going to compete with Netflix doesn't mean they're going to beat them, right? I mean, we can compete in a spelling bee, but you're going to kick my rear end. So I could try, but I won't succeed the same way Disney will try, and they won't succeed.
All right. For more on Wall Street and what's expecting from Disney, go to CNBC.com. I'm Melissa Lee. You're watching Fast Money on CNBC, first in business worldwide. Here's what else is coming up on Fast.
Bitcoin is really volatile today.
Yep, the cryptocurrency is in the midst of a stealth rally up 35% this month and back above $5,000. We'll tell you what's behind the move. Plus, Mark Tepper is making his debut at the plate. He says one under-the-radar stock that's surging is about to rev up. And yes, that's a hint. He'll give us his fast pitch. There's much more Fast Money right after this quick break.
time for a quick break to talk about McDonald's. Mornings are for mixing and matching at McDonald's. For just $3, mix and match two of your favorite breakfast items, including a sausage McMuffin, sausage biscuit, sausage burrito, and hash browns. Make it even better with a delicious medium iced coffee. With McDonald's mix and match, you can't go wrong. Price and participation may vary. Cannot be combined with any other offer or combo meal. Single item at regular price.
Sometimes it takes a different approach to help you unlock your true potential. With Capella University's game-changing FlexPath learning format, you gain relevant skills you can apply to your career right away. Earn your degree from an accredited university and be confident in the quality of your education. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu. Capella University is accredited by the Higher Learning Commission. Learn more at capella.edu/accreditation.
Welcome back to Fast Money. Tech leading the market higher this year, but it's the Dow legacy names that are really leading the pack. Dom Chu is back at the newsroom to break it all down for us. Hey, Dom.
Well, Melissa, that blistering run for the Dow back towards record highs just means that every stock, or just about every stock in the blue chip index, is in the green so far this year in 2019. Yes, we know that it's easy to post a 12% year-to-date gain when you fall by as much as you do in the fourth quarter. But what may be surprising to some traders and investors is that it's technology that's leading the way higher in the Dow, and that's because it's the Dow. We're talking about the biggest big cap names in the business. The three best year-to-date performers in the index: Cisco Systems, up around 28%. Apple, up around 27%. And IBM is up around 26% as well. If you expand it out further to the top 10 names, you'll find that both Intel and Microsoft are in there, gaining around 18% apiece. So old world tech is ruling the roost for now. As for what's lagging, it's healthcare names like Johnson & Johnson, which is up only 5%, but Pfizer is actually down around 2% year to date. That tech trade, Melissa, may be the relatively safe way to get cyclical exposure, but doing it through stocks seen by some as relatively less risky. We'll see if that trend continues into the second and third quarter and for the rest of the year. Back over to you.
All right, Dom. Thank you, Dom Chu in the newsroom. So, of course, this is the perfect time to play a little round of
Trade It or Fade It.
Fantastic.
That's right.
Exciting.
Yeah.
Legacy Tech Edition. I think we know how the rules work by now.
Can you let us know?
No, we're going to just kick it off with Tim.
I'm good with this.
Cisco up 28% this year. Tim, trade it or fade it?
Feeling confident. I'm going to trade Cisco. Look, to me, this is a stock I'm long. It's a stock that in mega cap tech land is the best combination, I think, of certainly valuation, possibly earnings growth, but think about where these guys have gone. They went from proprietary hardware to now effectively proprietary software. They're all about cybersecurity. They have an end-to-end solution on networks. I love this company, and this is a name. I stay there. I'm trading it again.
You know what? I'm with Tim on this one. The chart looks fantastic. The technicals, if you look at this, five-year highs, one-year highs, you know what happens at five-year highs? Everybody's happy. Nobody wants to sell. Everybody has a profit. So this one, as long as the market keeps running, Cisco looks like it just wants to keep on running with it.
Sorry, guys, I got to fade this one. So it's seen quite the run-up in price so far this year, and there's just really not enough growth for me at this stage of the game.
Guy, why don't you weigh in here?
Well, I'm not breaking the tie because it's 2-1, so I can only create a tie.
I never said you were breaking any tie, did I?
I'm glad you didn't say that. So my grandmother used to say to me, little guy, slow and steady. She'd call me little guy because then I was a little person. She used to say, slow and steady wins the race. And the valuation is reasonable, and they've made a transition. So I think Cisco is fine here. I think it continues to grind higher. Trade it. Sorry.
Trade it.
I thought that was
implied. I forgot what we were doing.
See, that's why
you
asked for the rules.
Yeah.
A different game.
Yeah.
Mark Tepper's up next. IBM, this is an interesting one. Trade it or fade it?
I'm going to fade this one. They just, quite frankly, don't grow. I mean, their top three business segments over the course of the last 3 years really haven't grown at all. They are not executing well on their internal initiatives, so I don't know how they're going to execute on their acquisitions. And just, again, they're not growing, so I'd be avoiding this one.
Maybe this could be a value play.
It could be a value trap too, Melissa, and I'm going to fade this one as well. IBM to me, despite the fact that it's an interesting valuation, they seem to have at least begun turning this Titanic. It's not the Titanic, but it's certainly nothing to get excited about in terms of earnings growth or positioning, frankly. Maybe at one point it was a Bitcoin play. I don't know what's going on.
Is it anymore?
They have a blockchain division. They make an awful lot of announcements. It's the growth. To go back to the Titanic, it trades like it has an anchor around it, right? It just doesn't trade well. So I'm a fader of it as well. Yep.
I'll play the game correctly, and I'll say trade it, although I'm not predisposed to like IBM. But, you know, Pete said something a couple weeks ago that had it's
changed your stance.
It's sort of rolling around in my head.
Yeah.
Because we used to do a thing called on the show called the Power Pitch, and a while back we power pitched the Red Hat. And what did IBM go and do? They bought Red Hat. I mean, remember that whole thing? Maybe that was their Hail Mary. Maybe, although they overpaid through the nose, maybe that's what gets them into the 21st century. So just for, as they say, I'll trade it.
Just for kicks.
Got it.
Kicks. As the kids Apple, trade it or fade it, BK.
You know, this is going to be controversial because people love Apple, but BK is going to fade it here. I'm a fader, not a hater. I mean, the thing about Apple here is I'm going to take more of a Warren Buffett approach, right, where I'm going to let the stock come to me on this. I don't think it's necessarily a bad company, but a lot has been priced in here. They've got a lot of hype into this. So I would wait for IBM, for Apple to come back probably to the 150 level before I were to trade it. So here I'm fading it.
Tepper.
So this is one I would trade. So I'm going with trade it here. So I think they've done an awesome job transitioning from selling units to offering services. And, you know, we haven't seen sentiment on this stock so negative in quite a long time. This is typically a consensus buy. Right now, it's about 50-50. As it's hitting new highs, once the street flips, the stock's going to pop.
All right. From old school tech to one of the new kids on the block, shares a lift. Major buzzkill today as the stock has fallen to its lowest level since going public in late March, closing the day just above $60 a share. This comes after the dean evaluation. Aswath Damodaran, appeared on this very show yesterday, sat over there, said the stock is overvalued, should be trading at $59 a share. Good call.
My estimate, and I'm bending every single rule to breaking point, is I get to about 15 or 16 billion. I mean, you got a business that lost $1 billion last year, hasn't figured out how to make money yet. I mean, the business model is broken right now across the board on ride sharing.
Plus, we found out today that Uber's valuation will be about $100 billion, and that's about $20 billion less than what had been expected. So is this bust, IPO boom, turning into a bust at this point, Tep?
Well, I think what this is really about is this is Lyft versus Uber. I think if the valuations were the same, I'd rather own Uber. But what you saw happen is Lyft kind of priced at the high end of their valuation range. Uber is pricing at the lower end. And I think, you know, investors at this point are saying, you know what, I'm just going to pull my chips off the table and I'm going to wait and see what I can get with Uber.
Now, Guy Adami, I know you weren't here yesterday to listen to the professor's full interview, but his point that he made on Uber is that he prefers Lyft over Uber because at least Lyft is a very focused business. You know the geography, which is the United States. You know its business, which is all ride sharing, whereas Uber is geographically spread out. It's got a lot of different businesses like meal deliveries and autonomous and all sorts of other things. And so that's why he would prefer Lyft. So
himself,
Exactly. And so I will toss that question to you.
Would you rather with a publicly traded company and a private company? No, I'll play the game.
I know, it's not apples to apples, but I mean, if you had to choose one that you'd be more favorable about in the next year, what would you say?
My sense is probably Uber, and I would just disagree. The reasons why the professor liked Lyft ahead of Uber, that's why I would flip it back and say that's why I like Uber. I think it's more diversified. With that said, in order to believe in Lyft, in my opinion, you have to believe within the next 10 to 15 years, we're not driving cars anymore, we're not buying cars anymore, and it's this gig economy, and I don't believe that's going to happen. So if I don't believe it, I can't own the stock.
Quick, trade it or fade it, Lyft?
Trade it here at these levels.
Trade it here
at these levels.
All right. Still ahead, Bitcoin in full bloom, soaring more than 30% in April alone. We will tell you what has the crypto world catching spring fever. Plus, Mark here stepping up to the plate, getting ready to make his very first fast pitch. So what stock has this rookie of the year got so excited about? Find out when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. Auto parts retailers are on a tear this year with the biggest names, AutoZone, Monroe, O'Reilly, all up double digits, trading at or near their all-time highs. One of these names is about to kick into overdrive. That's at least according to our fast pitch young gun, Mark Tepper. He's stepping up to the plate for his very first fast pitch. So what's the pitch, Mark?
All righty. So I like O'Reilly Automotive for a few reasons. Number one, the auto industry landscape is pretty brutal right now, which is favorable for O'Reilly. So new vehicle sales peaked in 2016. They've been on the decline ever since. We've recently seen that 90-day delinquencies are now hitting an all-time high, which means people are struggling to pay for these new vehicles. And right now, the auto fleet is the oldest it's been in history. What does all this mean? It means that consumers are going to opt to fix their current vehicles rather than purchase new vehicles. Second thing, the Amazon and electric vehicle threats, quite frankly, are overdone. So everyone thought that Amazon was going to come in and crush all these brick and mortar retailers. That's really not the case with the auto parts retailers, because if you think about it, if you're driving down the street, it's raining and you need a new windshield wiper, you're just going to stop and buy one. You're not going to buy it from Amazon to have it delivered tomorrow or the next day. And as far as electric vehicles go, yes, we are seeing some growth in electric vehicles, but it's still only 2% of sales. And then when auto sales slow down, O'Reilly outperforms. So if we take a look at this chart here, going back to June of 2007, all the way out to June of 2009, the last time we saw a significant slowdown in auto sales, we can see that the S&P 500 was down 38% over that time frame. Over the same exact time frame, O'Reilly was up 4%. Not too shabby. And then if we take a look at a three-year chart on O'Reilly, we can see that the price bottomed right here in July of 2017. Why was that? That's because at that point there was a big fear that Amazon was going to crush them. However, margins actually expanded, the stock advanced, went through a small consolidation phase here, and then in February of this year, broke out to hit new all-time highs. So we like O'Reilly.
Who has a question?
I've got a question for Mark. Mark, great job coming out there on Rookie, getting on the hill and actually throwing some heat is not easy to do in front of the in a tough stadium like this. Question for you, though, is everything that you've said about the company to me may possibly be in the price. At around 21 times, I think the company is at least at its kind of natural mature multiple. Arguably, you could say it's a little expensive here.
Okay. So, you know, I can agree with you there, but I think a lot of companies right now, the stock market in general, when you look at the multiple, are at or near their higher average multiple. So I do think there's more upside from here. I mean, quite frankly, as the economy continues to slow down, this is one of those stocks that outperform. We're seeing the economy slow down. We're still far away from a recession, but I do think this one has more upside.
Hey, so Mark, I'm curious, why O'Reilly versus its competitors? Is there something special about this particular company that you like other than anybody else?
Yeah, so they're continuing to grow their stores. When it comes to revenue per store, they are generating the highest amount. When you compare them to Advance Auto Parts and AutoZone, they're doing the best job, and they are excellent and by far the best when it comes to inventory management. So that's why we like them.
All right, no more time for questions. Time to vote. Are you buying Mark's pitch on O'Reilly? Tim Seymour.
So, look, I had to think about it for a little while, and I decided it is a buy. I do like the fundamentals for the sector. I do think that the auto sector is going through a bit of a transition here that favors certainly the auto parts business. Nice
BK.
Job.
Yeah, for me, he struck one right down the middle. Bio for BK. Buy everything.
Buy everything. It's fantastic. I always give, you know, I don't say necessarily buy or sell.
Which is really what you're supposed to do.
You don't play the game, you don't call it what it is.
But JP Morgan just added it to the focus list. If you look last quarter, operating margins actually improved. And I think it continues to rally into the April 24th earning release.
So the rookie threw a perfect game, right?
Lean sweep on the desk, but the more important question is, are you at home buying Mark's pitch for O'Reilly Auto? Vote in our Twitter poll at CNBC Fast Money. We will reveal the results later on the show. Not looking too good, but it's early innings. It's early innings for this rookie. This stock is up more than 70% this year, but it's tanking after hours. We'll give you the name and tell you what is driving the move when Fast Money returns. Welcome back to Fast Money. We've got an earnings alert on Bed Bath & Beyond. The retailer tanking after hours. Seema Modi's at headquarters with more. Seema. Yeah, Melissa, it's been an active stock to watch. Bed Bath & Beyond shares are lower, but better-than-expected earnings initially send the stock up by 7% after hours, then reversed course on a release that detailed its guidance. For the first quarter, 7 to 12 cents adjusted. The street was looking for 29 cents. Furthermore, full-year revenue expected to decline even more than what the street was anticipating, projecting a second straight annual sales decline. CEO says the company is prioritizing its transformation plan to streamline its costs and improve its revenue growth, gross margins, and putting more focus on launching private label brands. Now, interest from activist investors has excited the stock this year. It's up about 65% in 2019. Let's pivot to Costco, which has also had a nice run this year. Same-store sales for March up 5.9% and 20.6% for e-commerce as it tries to fend off competition from Amazon and Whole Foods. Telsey Group says just 6% of Costco's sales stores, Costco stores are within a mile of a Whole Foods and less than a quarter are within 3 miles. Those shares of Costco are lower right now. Melissa, back to you.
All right, Seema, thank you. Seema Modi. For Bed Bath & Beyond, I feel like this is one of those companies got a lifeline when Linens and Things went bankrupt.
Yep.
And here we are in the same sort of position, and maybe it's being disrupted by
Amazon.
Yeah, absolutely. And everybody thought that, oh, no, you go to Bed Bath & Beyond to buy these big products and they have kind of this unique place in the ecosystem, and it turns out they don't. The only reason why it was, in my opinion, it was up this year is because you had some activist investors in there. To me, this is just a no touch. You stay away.
Yeah, they offer no exclusive products at all. Anything you can buy there, you can get off of Amazon, right? But you compare them to Williams-Sonoma, which does offer their own exclusive products, and they can't get a multiple. So if they can't get a multiple, there's no reason to own Bed Bath & Beyond.
And there's 20% off coupons. I mean, who honestly goes to Bed Bath & Beyond without a 20% coupon?
First of all, if you're not if you're not paying down 20, get out of the game. The only issue I would say is, Guy, how do you pick out the scented candles online? You actually have to get in there.
No, you need to, and it's ever since Henry Bendel went out of business. Henry Bendel, by the way, had the best scented candles on the planet. A lot of people
would
say
Joe Malone
is very overwhelming. So I was a Henry Bendel guy. They're out of business. So I go to Bed Bath & Beyond for my bath mats.
Yep.
And my scented candles and my potpourri. Now, in terms of the stock, which is clearly why we're here, not to hear about my shopping habits.
Clearly.
I mean, the stock went from 11 to 20 from the beginning of December until recently. Valuation people say valuation is compelling. It's been compelling for the last 4 years. The stock went straight down. There's a huge short interest. The question you have to ask yourself that I don't know the answer to, will shorts cover on this sell-off that we're seeing in the aftermarket, or will they look at this as an opportunity to lean in again? My sense is with the activists in there, they'll probably use this as an opportunity to cover their shorts.
All right. Check out the home builders crushing it this year, up almost 25%, plus a bullish note out from J.P. Morgan this morning saying the space should see positive momentum into earnings season. One trader is betting nearly $1 million. One name in the space is about to rally. Mike Coe is in Reno, Nevada. That's some funky background behind you, Mike.
Wow,
with the options action, Mike.
This is a golf ball.
There. Yeah, so D.R. Horton's saw about two times the average daily call volume. And the reason we saw that activity was somebody went out and bought 4,000 of the May 44 calls. They paid $1.81 for those. Now, this is a roll of a previous bullish bet that they had made in the May 39 calls. They sold 2,350 of these. So essentially, they're doubling the size of their bullish bet, betting essentially that D.R. Horton is going to be above 4,581 by May expiration, which is about 5 weeks away.
All right, Mike, thanks for that. Mike Coe in Reno, Nevada, not Epcot Center. For more options action, check out the full show Friday, 5:30 p.m. Eastern Time. Still ahead, Bitcoin is back. The crypto surging more than 40% this year. So what is behind this move? Our resident Bitcoin baller, Brian Kelly, will weigh in. Plus, let's get a check on our Cramer cam. There's Jim talking to the Kohl's CEO about the company's partnership with Amazon. Catch that at the top of the hour. We're live at the Nasdaq Market Site in Times Square. Much more fast. Still ahead. Welcome back to Fast Money. Bitcoin making a big comeback, topping 5,000, holding steady near the cryptocurrency's highest level since November. So is this a sign of a Bitcoin resurgence? So we got the bug, by the way, back.
The bug.
What's driving this bounce?
I actually think it is a Bitcoin resurgence. I think there's really good chance that the December lows we saw in the 3,000s are probably the lows for this cycle. There's a couple things that are going on. You've seen improving fundamentals. You look at active addresses. That's one of the big metrics I look at. That's up 26% from the January lows. You look at transaction levels. Those are back to 2017 levels. So there's a lot of network activity. Then you look at who's buying this. You're seeing people like Fidelity still rolling out their institutional platform. And then as a proxy, look at the CME Bitcoin futures. The large open interest holders, so these are big institutions, those are at all-time highs, and it continued to grow. So last week, they saw record volume on CME Bitcoin futures. So you're starting to see institutional investors come in here with a good fundamental tailwind, and that's got Bitcoin back in the saddle again.
Will we see previous highs? Will we see record highs again?
Without question, this next cycle.
And how long is this next cycle?
You're talking probably a two-year cycle. So generally speaking, in 2020, the supply of Bitcoin is going to get cut in half. The cycle for Bitcoin is usually about a year before to a year after. So over this two-year period, you will likely get this big upswing, particularly if the institutions come in, and I think we surpass all-time highs.
So Brian, I tend to believe that Bitcoin's certainly the conduit, and this is certainly something that's here to stay. Are we going to see the insanity of the other tokens? And I don't, with all due respect, as we say in the South.
Yeah.
I
mean, so we had that insane ICO craze, right? And there's a lot of junk out there. A lot of those have gone to zero. I think you've separated the wheat from the chaff. You've got a lot of good altcoins, let's call them the top 10 or 20 in market cap, that actually I think are here to stay and will be big parts of the ecosystem.
All right. Up next, final trade. Welcome back. Well, it was Mark Tepper's first time at the plate, and he hit a home run with the desk with three buys. But Mark is about to find out the song we play when our traders lose the Twitter poll, which is quite often. Toni Braxton remix. Sorry, Mark. More than 60% of our Twitter fans say they are not buying your pitch. Maybe next time. Yeah, this happens.
By the way, I believe the rookie was gloating up at the plasma about
maybe this is
something
payback.
Under the table. Anyway,
final trade, Tim.
Cisco, love security, love the stock.
BK.
You look at the home builders. ITB, I think that Momo's going to turn into FOMO.
Mark.
Selling Disney, I think they're going to underwhelm on their streaming strategy.
Gee.
Well, it was a fun show, Mel.
Fun.
If you'd slide my final trade here, Biogen.
Did you forget it?
I love what
you
happened
forgot
there.
It.
I love what happened there.
That does it for us. See you back here tomorrow at 5 for more Fast and Mad Money starts right now.
At Capella University, you'll get support from people who care about your success. From before you enroll to after you graduate. Pursue your goals knowing help is available when you need it. Imagine your future differently at capella.edu.